preach from Elijah's life. His name, of course, Elijah, compound name, means my God is Jehovah. But before we get to Elijah, I see the stump that needs to be plowed up, not only as far as Israel is concerned, but as far as my own life. And all of our lives. And when Elijah shows up on the scene, if you know the history of the nation of Israel, they have divided. You got the north and the south. And he shows up to deliver a message to that northern kingdom in a time of which there is national separation. There is imitation salvation. They have their priests. They have their altars. They have their sanctuaries. But none of them are of God. Just an imitation of the real thing. And it's a sinful continuation. It just keeps on getting worse and worse and worse. And Elijah is a slap in the face when he shows up. And he says, I just want you to know that my God is Jehovah. He's still on the throne. And I want us to look for just a few moments this morning at this matter, and here's my thought, this matter of playing king. The whole trouble, as we notice concerning the history of Israel at this point in time, is that you got a lot of folks playing king. And anywhere you find this game going on in someone's life, there's going to be trouble. And of course, Israel is a perfect example of that, but we don't have to look to Israel. We can look in our own lives at times we've played king. And then we look at all around us and we can see this game going on in so many lives. And what comes out of it. But let's read some of these verses and we'll lay a little foundation and say four or five things about the business of playing king. I'm looking in chapter number 15 and verse number 25. Let me go back to chapter 12 and verse number 20. The Bible said, and it came to pass when all Israel heard that Jeroboam was come again, that they sent and called him unto the congregation and made him king. They made him king. This is the first of the setup of kings as far as that northern kingdom is concerned. And then in chapter number 15, verse 25, it says, and Nadab, the son of Jeroboam, began to reign over Israel. You look at the latter part, it said he reigned 2 years. And verse number 26, and he did evil in the sight of the Lord. Verse 27, Baasha, the son of Ahijah of the house of Issachar, conspired against him, and Baasha smote him. Verse 28, even in the third year of Asa, king of Judah, and he reigned in his stead. Verse 29, it came to pass when he reigned that he smote all the house of Jeroboam and left not to Jeroboam any that breathed. Then if you look in verse number 8 of that same, verse number 8 of chapter number 16, in the 26th year of Asa, king of Judah, began Elah, the son of Baasha, to reign over Israel in Tirzah, and he reigned 2 years, the scripture said. Verse 9, and his servant Zimri, captain of half of his chariots, conspired against him. Verse 10, Zimri went in and smote him and killed him. Verse 11, and it came to pass when he began to reign. I'm just emphasizing these different kings. As soon as he sat on his throne, that he slew all the house of Baasha. He killed all of them. Verse 15. And in the 27th year of Asa, king of Judah, did Zimri reign 7 days. I don't know if it's worth it, do you? I mean, playing king seems to be a little dangerous. Verse number 18, it came to pass that Zimri saw that the city was taken, that he went into the palace of the king's house and burnt the king's house over him with fire, and he died. Then look in verse number 21. Then were the people of Israel divided into two parts. Half the people followed Timnah, the son of Ganath, to make him king, and half followed Omri. But the people that followed Omri prevailed against the people that followed Timnah, the son of Ganath. So Timnah died, and Omri reigned. Then look, if you will, down in verse number 29. In the 38th year of Asa, king of Judah, began Ahab, the son of Omri, to reign over Israel. And Ahab, the son of Omri, reigned over Israel in Samaria 22 years. Ahab did the son of Omri did evil in the sight of the Lord above all that were before him. And it came to pass, as if he had been a light thing for him to walk in the sins of Jeroboam the son of Nebat, that he took to wife Jezebel, the daughter of Ethbaal, king of the Zidonians, and went and served Baal and worshipped him. He reared up an altar of Baal in the house of Baal, which he had built in Samaria. And so God was angry in verse 33 against him. And of course, this brings on chapter 17 and verse 1. Elijah the Tishbite, who was of the inhabitants of Gilead, said unto Ahab, and so we have the confrontation. If you want to see the ending of Ahab, you can go on over to chapter number 22. And verse number 37. So the king died and was brought to Samaria, and they buried the king in Samaria. And one washed the chariot in the pool of Samaria, and the dogs licked up his blood. And the latter phrase says, according to the word which the Lord spake. So I'm interested in the reason why Elijah is called, the reason why God sends his people and gives them the message that he gives them. We notice that these kings are rising up in Israel, all across the land. The problem is none are anointed. They're all self-appointed. And understand that God never anoints a person and places his blessing on a person's life who thinks he's kingly material, who thinks that he or she can rule, whether it is their own life or whether it is someone else's life. The Bible said that God resisteth the proud, but he giveth grace unto the what? Unto the humble. There are some questions I think we could ask before we draw this together in our main thoughts. These questions we could ask our own selves, because it's important. When we see the beginning of all these kings and the end of all these kings, there are some 20 kings who rule in Israel from the beginning of it until they are carried away, the last one in captivity. Ahab fits in as the seventh one. And when we see all of the turmoil, all the strife, and we see all the murdering, we see all that transpires there and how it ends. They all die. They all die. As a matter of fact, listed in the Bible are some 1,200 kings, the word king mentioned, and guess what? They all died. kings die, and many of them die cruel deaths. So we need to first begin to ask ourselves the question, who do we want to rule our lives? Who do we want to be king when it comes to our lives? I guess the first question we'd ask is, would you like to be king? Is there anything that you'd like to dominate over? That you would like to control? The second question I would ask is, how bad do you want to be king? How bad do you want to be king? And I'll tell you, as we look around this world, especially in political realms, we see these people that they desire to rise up the political scale and ladder. But this is in every walk of life that you have people who want to dominate. I guess the third question would be, what would you do to become king? Because somehow, I mean, it's not everybody's going to turn over the throne to you. Not every heart's just going to come in and bow down and say, yeah, you just go ahead and take over. So there would have to be, a lot of times, some drastic measures that you would have to take in your own hands. You would have to devise some plans to where you could supersede or you could take someone off the throne. So what if you're going to be king, what would you do? How far would you go? Look at the extent of which these guys will go to become king. And if you want an extreme form of that, all you got to do is look at the major powers that have been down through the ages, the Alexander the Greats and so on, and all the way to Hitler. Look at all that was done because one man wanted to be in charge of everything. But we can bring it down microscopically to our own hearts and to the devastations that can come in our own lives and in the lives of others simply because we have determined that somehow we're going to run this thing. The next thing you're going to have to ask yourself the question is, if you ever do get in charge, what are you going to have to do to stay there? What do you have to do to remain the king? As we notice that these guys, just because they're on the throne doesn't mean they're safe. Matter of fact, it's the most dangerous place you can be is on the throne. Because you become a target to everybody else that's wanting the throne. That's why all of God's people come out of obscurity. And most of the time, nobody even knows where they come from and how they got there. I'm thinking about John the Baptist. When he comes, he just walks right in on the scene. I'm thinking about Elijah. They don't even have time to contemplate about him. He just shows up because him and God's been somewhere. They ain't trying to run anything. He's not. What would you have to do to those who would threaten your kingdom? I'll tell you the great question is, and there's no way to enumerate it, there's no way to calculate it, the many who have suffered because one man decided he wanted to play king. How could we calculate the deaths that have happened because of war, and every war that ever happens is somebody somewhere is playing king? I mean, just World War II, all of the millions, estimated millions upon top of millions that died all around the world. And just look at this small amount of text that I have read to you and how many had to die so these men, 20 men, could play king. And I guess the great question to ask is, have we ever considered the end of all of those kings in this world? And even further than that, I would ask this question. And the question we must ask ourselves is if we are trying to be king and if we are struggling to be king, does that suggest that there is no king? The one question that we must ask all of our hearts to find out if we're playing king is, do you have a king and who is that king?
By the fact that these men are doing what they're doing, what they're saying is, I'm going to be king. And by implication, there is no king besides me. Have you ever played, you remember when you were children, and not everybody will own up to this, but I played it a few times, King of the Hill. That's a game, everybody, no matter who's there, the person just struggles to get to the top. Pushing everybody back, kicking everybody back, getting up there just so you can be on top. But the whole time you're on top, you're being pulled this way and pulled that way, and eventually understand you're not going to stay up there long. Somebody's going to pull you down, and as soon as you get down, somebody jumps up in your place. That's what this matter of playing king is all about. But let me just amplify four thoughts about he comes. Elijah is called on the scene. The whole reason Elijah has been developed in obscurity, the whole reason why he has been anointed and given a word from God is because somebody out there is playing king. Because you see, there's coming a day when he's going to rule king, and there'll be no other king. But what a blessed day, the Bible tells us, will be. There will be peace. And I'll get to that. Elijah is preaching. Here he is proclaiming. He is prophesying. Because when he shows up on the scene, Ahab has taken on the role as king. King. Now, before I get too down on these guys, can we all be honest and say there's a little king in every bit of every one of us? And it rises up on different levels. You ever feel that king rise up in your marriage relationship? Oh, well, you ain't telling me what to do. Yeah, didn't you ever feel that king rise up when you were under the authority of your parents and you said, oh, no, you're going to tell me. I'm old enough to vote now. I can drive a car. I'm going to do what I want to do. King. That's that king coming out of you. But there's a warning ahead of time from the Scriptures. Hey, don't play that game. Because when it's all over with, it's not a game. It's a reality, and it has a price tag with it. So let me just point out four or five things about this matter of playing king before we ever get to the life of Elijah. First of all, I would say to you what is evident for all of these kings is that playing king will kill you. Now, I'm not going to say it might kill you or there's a chance it's going to kill you. If there's any king in you, that king that's in you, now we can blame it on everybody else. We can say, well, it was Baasha that killed, you know, Jeroboam's son, and it was Zimri that killed the other one's son. But I'm going to tell you what killed them. They had king in them. The very king that is in you is going to be the cause of your death. It's going to drain all the life. You cannot have life and have king at the same time. You're moving down the avenue of death. Playing king will kill you. Not only does it have those outside targets against you. I mean, it's like the lion, the king of the jungle. Have you ever seen those documentaries? You've always got them young lions rising up until that lion gets too old to defend himself, and the young lion will destroy the old lion. It's going to happen sometime. The king's going down. They're all dead. They're all dead. You name all the kings of all the history of all times, I'll tell you one thing about them. They're dead. And all of these kings, basically the king in them is what put them in the position of being killed. Playing king is really a death experience. Let me say this. Playing king is a deadly experience. As Brother Earl prayed and in his prayer mentioned this thing about humility and humbleness of heart. Man, I'm going to tell you, it ought to be our cry, our constant cry, God, give us grace to be humble. Not only in our humility, but give us grace to be humble. Because I must confess to you that there are times that and nothing should bring fear to the hearts of God's children any more than sensing at any time that there's a rising up in us or a thinking that we are above others. And whatever the avenues of life are. For me, it's a preacher. It is an evangelist. And there can be the rising up inside. And so sometime that somehow maybe I might think that maybe I might have a little bit to do with this. God, help me. And it is my prayer because that brings such fear to my heart because I know the truth. I know the truth. That without him, I can do nothing. Playing king is the quickest way to death and the death experience. And if you don't believe it, look at the Hollywood crowd, look at the sports figures, and you can see that the life has been drained out of them. Playing king. The second thing I would say to you is playing king will not only kill you, but playing king is what confuses you. Have you seen all of the confusion and the unsettledness? If you'll go back and read the experiences of these kings, or all you got to do is read the course of history, and you can find that there is nothing but confusion on every hand. As they struggle over who's to be the next king. Are we going to take Omri or are we going to take Timni? And if we take one, the other's got to die. And so the struggle across the whole nation is who's going to run the show. Confusion. But let's nail it down in application to our own hearts is what we want to do. We got to face this matter of king. Is Any contentions and strifes within our lives that brings confusion is always an indication that there is a king in there somewhere. There's a king in there somewhere. You look at someone's life that is troubled. And you look at it, there's so much conflict going on. There's so much struggle. And they're always here or they're always there. To and fro. What you know is the problem is not on the outside. The problem is on the inside. It's the king on the inside, the one that's trying to be king, that's trying to run the show, trying to make the decisions. The one that has all the opinions that's causing all the trouble. If you wiped away all the kings out of all our hearts and left the one king, honey, you'd do away with all of that. All of the confusions, the troubles. And if you want to look at confusion, as I say, anywhere in the Scripture, when you have the rising up of a king, there's so much trouble. Here's Jezebel. Jezebel, you know the problem with Jezebel? Jezebel's daddy played king. He's a Baalite king. So what you've got is you've got an Ahab, a self-appointed king that doesn't know God, who marries a Jezebel, whose daddy is a Baalite king, and so she thinks she's got king in her, and you got a woman king and a man king coming together, both of them trying to play king, and you got hell on earth. Think about Absalom. It dawned on me one day, I was reading Absalom. And you know Absalom's the guy that tried to take the son of David that run him off the throne. Did you know that Absalom's mama's daddy was a king? Can you imagine the talk around the house? She said, son, you're not like the rest of David's son, the king's sons. Your daddy, your grandpa's a king on this side. And I tell you, you got king in you. And if any one of the sons ought to be king, you ought to be king. And as a matter of fact, you could be king better than even your grandpa could be king. Why don't you just go ahead and take the kingdom? He had king on all sides. He had king on both sides of the family. No wonder he hung from a tree. So much confusion. Playing king will kill you. Playing king will confuse you. Total confusion. If you don't believe it, listen when the Democrats and Republicans get together. I'm going to say, well, I'm for this side. And they're all confused because they're all playing king. The third thing that I would say to you is that this matter of playing king consumes you. If you are intent on being king, you ain't got time for nothing else. Because you have to give your whole being and your whole life every moment to being that king. You got to concentrate on how you can stop others. You've got to get the forces together to keep others from taking you off the throne. That takes so much of your energy. And then you've got to put a lot of energy as to what you're going to do because you are king and all the things you're going to orchestrate because you are king. So much so that everything about you, every bit of your whole total being has been consumed to one little thing. You're narrowed down to one little thing, and that's a king. And playing king, get this, we'll always narrow you down to one little thing. There'll always be that one little thing in a king's life that consumes his whole being. Because it is what represents his being king. Sometimes it's alcohol. Sometimes it's drugs. Sometimes it's sex. Sometimes it's trying to get to a throne, such as a politician may be. Who knows what it may be, but there will always be in someone's life, the devil, will so work in that matter of that kingly spirit until there's going to arise something, something's going to soak up everything that you are. And I'm sure that Jason could testify to that in the prisons, that each one of those that's in there is in there because of that one thing that the king on the inside has allowed to be the dominant thing in their lives. But on the other side, isn't it so refreshing? I want to hurry down to the end of having a real king, but isn't it so refreshing when there is no one thing dominating your life, but you get to enjoy life because you've got the king who is your life. Playing king will kill you. Playing king will confuse you. Playing king will consume you. It will consume you. That was the problem with the devil. He was consumed with wanting to ascend to the heights and to be like the Most High. He wanted to take over God's throne. And look. He's wasted all of this time still trying to be king. And he's going to be cast into the lake of fire. We already know the end, but he ain't giving up. He's consumed with it. It will kill you, it will confuse you, it will consume you. But can I say to you that this matter of playing king will corrupt you. The thing that all of these kings, if you read these kings and what it said about Ahab, it says about these other kings, it will say, and Jeroboam did evil in the sight of the Lord. Then his son, it said, and he did evil in the sight of the Lord as his father did. And then it would say he did evil in the sight of the Lord and even worse than the king that was before him. And then when we get to Ahab, it's so piled up that the Bible said that Ahab did more evil in the sight of the Lord than all of the kings that were before him. It just keeps getting worse and worse. It keeps getting more evil and darker because anywhere there is a king, mark it down, there any time that there is a king running the show, there's sin somewhere. There's sin somewhere. There's evil somewhere. A king will he's always bent toward evil. I'm talking about a self-appointed king. We'll always lean toward that which is evil. Always going toward that which is corrupt. And that's why this world doesn't understand. You know, this world, the problem is we're right at the end time. We're right just before this old world stepping off into what they call globalism, one world government. But really, it's setting things up for the Antichrist. And everything makes sense to this world. If you begin to, if you think like a king in this old world, it makes sense. Because what you want to do is you want to have one man on top and you want him to be able as easy as he can to be in charge of everything below him, sort of like a pyramid. So that's why it makes sense. Do away with the money, the dollar, the hard cash, and let's go ahead and get a mark. Because then all you have to do, everybody is identified easily. Doesn't that make sense? What's the problem with just getting the mark? It ain't going to hurt you. Just get you a little more. Then you can go and buy your food and all those other things. And of course, it'll have that symbolism of the Antichrist somehow connected to that. We don't understand all there is to it. But we know that's what it's moving toward. To where, and that's the problem in America. Somebody said they're against small business. I'm going to tell you why they're against small business. Because all small businesses are independent. They can't, I mean, this one world government can't operate with independence. You have to be brought under the umbrella of that pyramid to where there's just one government. There's one as far as education is concerned. There's one as far as military is concerned. It's all under that one head. And we know who but the problem is they ain't got sense enough or they don't care as to who the head's going to be. The head is always going to be evil. Always has been and always will be. Nimrod, wicked and evil. That first pyramid. I mean, all the way down through Babylon. That world power rising up. Evil and wicked. The Greeks and the Romans and the Alexander the Greats, all the way down to this day. Anywhere you find a world power or you find a pyramid or you find a kingdom, you're going to find something that's headed up with evil. That may make it look good to you. It may seem good to you. It may seem great. Man, this is great. Let's just do it this way. It's great. And that's why this world is laughing at us. And that's why the radicals in America and in politics are laughing at us. That's why they're calling us old fogies. Because I'm going to tell you, the gospel we preach only recognizes one king. He's not of this world. And we're not going to get under any other kingdom.
The truth of the matter is, we got a flag. I thank God for America, but there's a flag in my heart that flies higher than the one. And they know that. And it's not until they can get rid of all of that, and they would be willing today to sacrifice every one of us. And if you don't believe it, look at the history of the Indian. They'll sacrifice every one of us because this old world has a spirit. The spirit of this old world, it has a spirit and it is headed toward a throne of which the devil's going to sit on. And it's going to be hell everywhere. Because that's what the tribulation is going to be. Is once that man gets on his throne, God's going to turn this world upside down. But he's always done it. He likes to mess kings up. He likes to confuse kings. He likes to, I'm going to tell you, but he'll do the same thing in our own hearts. If we're not careful, we'll allow those kings to rise up and say, well, I'm going to just do it. You've got to be careful and say, oh, Lord, are you the king of my decision? Are you the one that's, I want to go your way? This matter of playing king will not only kill you and confuse you and consume you, it'll corrupt you. But can I say to you, this matter of playing king will condemn you. Psalm 2 verse 2 summarizes, said, the kings of the earth have set themselves and the rulers have taken counsel together against the Lord and against his anointed king. That's the problem. Anytime there's a king in you, what is a sign of is you have rejected the king. I say that to my own heart on whatever measure it is. You cannot have a king and accept the king. He's the one that has to be the king. The very Spirit of Christ operating in our hearts. If any man have not the Spirit of Christ, he is none of his. Christ ruling on the throne. But here's what I notice. You get no help from God playing king because he don't like the game and he won't play the game. None of these kings get any help from God to endorse them and enforce them and keep them from being taken off the throne. It's as if God just stands back and says, go ahead. Get rid of him. Just go ahead. He will not stand. He will not protect. He will not provide for the substitute kings of this world. Which leads me to say, and again, I am so glad I was born in America. I love America, but God is not American. And she in and of herself has become so kingly. And do not think that God is a respecter of persons. And somehow he's in heaven, just got all the angels ready in case something happens to his America. No, he hasn't. And I promise you that the day is going to come, and this is why as children of God, we need to in our hearts be prepared to this, that this nation is going down just like every other nation. And what we know is we deserve it probably more than any other nation. There is this matter of a condemnation because, listen, the thing about it is any time you're playing king, you've got to be afraid of the king.
Because the Bible said he's given him a name that is above every name, that name that every knee should bow and every tongue should confess. I mean, God has made him king. And as a result of that, the scripture said that God will laugh at those in derision that are playing king. Because he's not interested in our game. But oh, I'm going to tell you. What a blessed experience and day of hope that we're looking for. Because if we have allowed him to be king in our hearts, the main thing that prevails within us is we're looking for him to come. We want the king to show up. And you know why? Because we realize that just in one heart. Now, we can see what happens to those who do not allow him to be king. But yet, on the other side, haven't you seen an old drunkard and he gets saved and the Lord becomes king? And you see that peace and that joy and that deliverance? I miss Rusty here this morning. Isn't he a prime example of that? He lived many years playing king. Playing king. He got sucked down that hole of whatever. But I'm going to tell you something. What you knew when he came here is that he had a king. He was not a king. And in those things that he would write and he would send me, I so enjoyed them because I could tell in his heart there was one king prevailing and he was looking forward to meeting that king. Hallelujah. The truth of the matter is, he's always been king. He is king. And he will forever be king. So why don't we just let him be king in our lives? Lord of lords and King of kings. And every other king is going to have to bow before him. And what great condemnation they must live through their whole lives. And then to one day face the one that you spent your whole life trying to run off the throne. But on the other hand, to have met the king, to have experienced the king, to have believed on the king, to have bowed before the king, to have given your life to the king, to have begged the king to kill the king in you, to ask him to kill him. Isn't that our prayer? Lord, just go ahead and kill him. When he rises up, break him down. Because you've experienced the peace that only comes when things are ruled by the king. You've experienced the joy that only comes when a heart is dominated by the King of kings and Lord of lords. And when he becomes king, the Bible said the day is going to come when the lion and the lamb snuggle up together. It ain't going to happen under Ahab. And I'm not into politics, but I'm going to tell you, it seems like no matter who we put in on the throne, as far as America is concerned, that it's like this all the time. The lion and the lamb will lie down together, and a child will play upon the hole of an asp or a snake. That ain't going to happen with Jezebel around. But it is possible. In this old world, run by those who are playing kings on every level, for you and I to have that peace and that joy in our own hearts because he is king. He is king. Israel's in a bad way, in a dark way, degenerate way. But you can narrow it all down to one thing. All you got to do is ride into town, and you can summarize it. You can smell it. Somebody's playing king here. And that's the same thing you can do with your... That's the same thing I can do with my own life. Let's talk about children, grandchildren. We've got four young ones. We all got a little bit of that in us. But you raise them young ones, and every now and then you see that big king come up. And you hate to have to pray this prayer, but you know it's a prayer you have to pray for your own heart, even for your youngest. Now, Lord, I pray in mercy that you'll take care of that. You'll kill that king, and you'll become king. And now I got these 13 grandyoungins, and they're coming along. And I know they're going to be king in them. I mean, that's human nature. That's human nature. Don't make me love them any less. But it sure does put me on my face before God and say, Lord, now, as quick as you can, you become king. I don't know what route that'll take, but Lord, I don't want them to have the struggles and the contentions and the hate and the death. Everywhere's death, the smell of death. And anywhere you smell death, you know somebody's played king. Don't you love to come into the presence? And I already mentioned, but there's several in this church come into the presence of Brother Rusty and say, I don't smell any death here. I don't smell any contention here. I don't sense but one thing, and that is Jesus is King. Playing King.